Pam, we'll huddle up there with you. All right, guys, I think we're going to call this meeting to order. We're going to start with our moment of silence, if everyone could bow their heads. Okay, guys, I think now we'll do the Pledge of Allegiance, so everyone could please stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Jeff, you'll call the roll.
All right, Ben Cass. Ivy Graham.
Here.
Kathy DeGeneres.
Here.
Melissa Anderson.
Here.
Larry Davis.
Here.
Wendy Neal. Francine Smith.
Here. All right, the next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes. We have three meetings here in our packet. Does anyone want to make a motion to waive the reading of the minutes?
I make a motion to waive the reading of the minutes.
I second.
Roll call.
Ivy Graham?
Yes.
Kathy DeGeneres?
Yes.
Melissa Anderson?
Yes.
Larry Davis?
No.
Francine Smith?
Yes. Is there a motion to approve the May 16th minutes?
I make a motion to approve May 16th minutes.
I second.
Ivy Graham?
Yes.
Kathy DeGeneres?
Yes.
Melissa Anderson?
Yes.
Larry Davis?
No.
Francine Smith?
Yes. Minutes approved. Do we have a motion to approve the May 24th minutes?
I make a motion to approve the May 24th minutes.
I second.
Ivy Graham?
Yes.
Kathy DeGeneres?
Yes.
Melissa Anderson?
Yes.
Larry Davis?
No.
Francine Smith?
Yes. Minutes are approved. Is there a motion to approve the June 23rd minutes?
I make a motion to approve the June 23rd minutes.
I second.
Ivy Graham?
Yes.
Kathy DeGeneres?
Yes.
Melissa Anderson?
Yes.
Larry Davis?
No.
Francine Smith?
Yes. Minutes are approved. Next item on the agenda is to open the meeting up for public comment.
Ms. Ivy Graham, we have a special speaker that would like to have a few additional minutes, and that's Ms. Rebecca. She would like to say thank you to the library board. Does she have your approval to?
She does.
I'm sorry, I'm nervous as heck.
That's fine.
Fine.
Y'all are the only ones I want to have to dress up for. I prefer to stay on my little farm. But I wanted to come here tonight and to express my gratitude with y'all. When I came to this board, when I came to a meeting, I was invited, and somebody that I didn't know at the time, but I don't consider him a friend anymore. I consider him family. I've met and talked with a lot of y'all, consider y'all friends, and very thankful for the conversations that, you know, we have gotten to have. When I came here, prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance was not acknowledged at that time. And when after it was all over with and I came and spoke with y'all, it was an oversight. And I was so thankful that y'all all unanimously approved, because y'all understood how important that it is. And it's important to all of us by just what we get to do in our everyday life. So I want to thank y'all for voting for the moment of silence, and I want to thank you for the Pledge of Allegiance. I just wanted to talk to y'all because in speaking with many of y'all, y'all challenge children to read books. Well, I am challenged. I don't like to read. So I did take you upon that, and I got me a library card. Well, I started with the small books, and I'm glad I did. That was about where I could handle. So I'm glad that I now own and a part of the library. I would like to challenge y'all, and we've spoke, all of us spoke, about the events y'all have coming up that, you know, help recognize people in the service or people that maybe protect our communities and things, and I am so grateful for that. And I will do anything I can to volunteer and help y'all, because I'm very pleased with that. I would like y'all to challenge our children, though, to read more patriotic books and bring us back to the core of what I was brought up to in this parish. And back then, we had some pretty high standards. We were ready to stand up, say the Pledge of Allegiance. You know, we all understood what it was about. There are some books I would like for y'all to maybe put on those reading challenges. Smaller kids, there's one called America the Beautiful, and You're a Grand Old Flag. I flew through those. I was able to read that. That was great. Another one was written by Dr. Ben Carson. It's called Why America Matters. There's one called Stories from a Soldier's Heart. Now, I would like to read something to y'all and why this does mean so much to me. Because there are so many men and women that have given their lives and sacrifices under that flag. And it does mean a lot. This gentleman's name, he is a native of Baton Rouge. His name is Marvin J. Roberts. He graduated from Baton Rouge High in 1961. He attended Louisiana State University and enlisted in the Army National Guard. During the summers, he attended Airborne and Special Forces training and graduated from Ranger School in 1963, graduating from Officer Candidate School in 1964. He volunteered for active duty in 1965 and was assigned to the 101st Airborne Division as a platoon leader. He was awarded the Silver Star of Heroism under fire on June 20th, 1966. While going to the aid of his company, mauled near the village of, and I'm going to slaughter these names, so please forgive me, Trung Lo, in September, he received the Army Commendation of Medal for Valor under action. He was injured when he was thrown from a Jeep, and he recuperated in Japan and at Fort Benning, Georgia. After a promotion to captain, he volunteered to go to Vietnam in 1969. And on March the 27th, 1969, he led his unit against a well-entrenched army force near Cam Lo, where he was mortally wounded. In spite of his wounds, he called in the artillery fire, air support, and following the bombardment, pressed his company forward. With an enemy grenade launched nearby, he grabbed it, threw it back at the enemy bunker, killing all the occupants. When a concealed enemy machine gun fired upon him and his men, he charged up the slope to silence it with a handgun and grenade. Even though he was mortally wounded, he refused to evacuate until the enemy position had been taken and other casualties had been treated. He died the following day of his injuries. That is a hero. Those are the people that I'm honored by. And what I'm honored by was to find out this was my husband's uncle. And I only get to read about him in papers. But when I look at my son, he looks just like him. And so that is a great privilege that we have. I read up on North Korea, when people disrespect their flags or they disrespect their leaders, you're subject to harsh penalties, to even prison. So we need to ask ourselves, why do we have these freedoms? How come we have them? And have everybody look at these other countries and realize where we live, it's the greatest country on earth. No matter what your ideas are, no matter what your beliefs are, that flag wraps every one of us in it. And that's what I'm thankful for. If you will look here, our community is filled today with everybody that you can think of from different backgrounds, beliefs. And I'd like to take, is there anybody out here that has served in the military, currently serving in the military? Would y'all please stand? Do we have anybody here? Thank y'all. Ask is if there is any police officers, and I do see uniforms, if y'all will please stand. If y'all serve in the capacity where you serve us, whether it's EMS, fire department, police department, please stand and be recognized, because y'all are part of our fighting team. I do consider other people fighters, and other people may not agree,
But if there is anyone here that is running for a position, that currently seats in a position, whether it is local, it is parish, or it is statewide, please stand up and be recognized, because we appreciate each and every one of you. Challenges on, and I look at all these faces out here, and I told my husband, I said, this is the worst election in my lifetime. And he said, why? I said, because there is not a person here, I said, that I don't call a friend, that I wouldn't call upon. And I said, and I'm glad I can't vote in every district. I said, because I love them all. And I feel like no matter who gets elected, we're going to be served very well. And so I'm going to hold you accountable for your positions. Get out there, get elected, get to fighting everybody. Start standing up with a flag. Make our purposes known. We are Livingston Parish. This is what we stand for. Everyone is welcome here. It doesn't matter who you are. You're welcome. Come be a part of the community, because this is what I want to see. I don't want to see y'all after a hurricane or after a tornado. I want to see y'all out. I know everybody here is good people, and I thank y'all for coming. But I do have one last group of people I would like to recognize.
You ladies and gentlemen up here, for all of y'all that come and do this willingly, I appreciate you. I have been asked, am I running for a position? Am I running for a committee? I am making it verbally now to everyone. There is nothing that I'm seeking. I do not want a position. I do not want to be on a committee. You've done what I wanted, and I thank you so much. But I would like to take this time, because I did promise the people that came, I know y'all had other commitments, but you wanted to recognize how much the American flag meant to us. So if y'all need to leave to go to your next appointment, please feel free to do so. But I don't want to hold anybody, because I know y'all are pressed for time.
Well, thank you, Rebecca. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate y'all.
And I'm going to call quickly when we get finished. That I will let everybody see. One, yes. But I do, there is somebody I'd like to introduce you to. Ideas were thrown around, and this gentleman brought something to me that I thought was fantastic, and I just thought it was something y'all should hear. So I'd like him, if he is available. Who? Did you want to say anything? Have you been able to talk to anybody?
I have.
Did you want to stand up? Come up. This is Hoot Parker.
Thank you, Ms. Rebecca.
Good evening, board. I don't know that I will be a fantastic speaker as well as Rebecca was, but I'm here as a citizen. I'm here as a previous board member of 27 years for the Sewer District of Livingston, and there's something that disappoints me quite a bit and that I took knowledge of about 2 months ago, and it concerns you guys. And the problem I have is, who's the oldest board member here?
Ms. Kathy, present.
And may I ask how long you've been serving?
38 years.
And what is your compensation pay for you serving?
Zero.
That's what concerns me.
Any councilmen still here? Did they leave?
They left.
For the parent? Aaron?
Yes.
Do you oppose that I take care of the legal side and seeing why we can't get that passed at the board, that these folks get compensated? Because I don't know of any other district that's not being compensated. And I feel as a citizen, working for 27 years for a board, I don't know how they put the time in, keep up with their kids, still do their job, and still want to come up here and put up with us. So I'm asking you as a board member and any other councilman, I'm sorry, John Lawson as a councilman. I'm asking you guys, after the smoke clears from your 27th meeting coming up, I would like to schedule it sometime following that, the next month. I would like to propose that. I'd like to introduce it to the council, and I would like to put that in motion. But I understand there's some state legalities that may be involved in this. So if you guys will help me do that homework, I would like to be able to compensate these folks. It's not payment. They're already given their time. You can't pay these folks enough money to do what they're doing. And as a responsibility as a citizen, I think we need to step up and make sure these folks get compensated. Does anybody disagree with that?
Not at all.
What about you guys? Do you oppose of us pushing this through for you?
I have nothing to say about this. I'm the director.
Well, I want to commend you. I want to thank you for your hard work and effort.
I just wouldn't want the money to come from the library.
That's right.
I don't want to take money away from the library. Our librarians are overworked and underpaid already.
So with that said, I'll let you guys go ahead with your meeting. Thank you.
Regular. Okay, guys, this is the section of the meeting that we are open to public comments for the audience or the attendees here. If there's any item of the agenda you'd like to speak about, we just ask that you give your name and where your address, and you have a 3-minute period of time.
Hello. My name is Amanda Jones. I am a lifelong resident of Watson. I'd like to talk about 8A-11, 8A-15. First of all, I was not here when it was announced that Michelle was director. And so I just wanted to congratulate Michelle Parrish on being appointed director and on Dustin Cotton for being appointed assistant director of rent services. Both of them are way more qualified, more than enough qualified, and I think they'll do an excellent job. So I'd like to thank the board for recognizing their history of hard work as well as their impeccable resumes. I look forward to hearing about the changes in policy that are on the agenda tonight, and I trust our library's leadership and hope the board will trust them as well. It's been a really tough year, but I wanted to highlight some of the amazing services our library provides the community in hopes that it continues. Did you know that our library offers over 300,000 physical items for checkout, as well as digital books, movies, music, newsletters, newspapers, and magazines? They offer free cultural passes to places like the World War II Museum, the Bluebonnet Swamp, reading challenges. My team especially loved the cottagecore tea party the other day, and we used to do book babies and story time. They provide resources for veterans, educators, small business owners, provide resources for help with taxes, homework, genealogy, and job searches, just to name a few. A Smithsonian Magazine poll in 2020 saw that there are more people that attend public libraries, use public libraries, than movie theaters and live sporting events combined every year. Many of our citizens struggle financially, and the library offers resources, a place to gather, and a place to feel safe. So as we listen to library readership, go over the changes in policies, I hope that the board and in turn our parish council will support the library under the direction of Ms. Parrish and Ms. Cotton. Mr. Cotton. We have an award-winning system, and I hope it stays that way, and y'all have been doing a really great job, so thank you.
Hi. First, I want to thank you guys for being here and for doing everything that you guys have done, and thank you to all of the people that are here in support or against anything. As many of the military members know, that we all took an oath for service. I served 20 years in the military, and part of my oath was to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And the Bill of Rights falls under the Constitution. We're all very familiar with the First and the Second Amendment. But how many here recall the 14th Amendment? The 14th Amendment states that it has a number of important concepts, mainly most famously state action, privileges and immunities, citizenship, due process, and equal protection, all of which are contained in Section 1. It was passed in 1866 and ratified in 1868 to include formerly enslaved people and provided all citizens with equal protection under the law. And I feel that equal protection is having books available. And outside in front of the children's section, it says that parents should be with their children in that section. The library is not a daycare and should not be treated as one. And if you do not trust that your child needs to learn, then we have an issue. And if your child hears you talk negativity about any of the LGBTQIA, which also serve in the military now and have always served since the American Revolution, If they hear you talk negatively about it, do you think they're going to be willing to come out to you? Do you think they're going to feel safe enough? They're going to be forced, if it's not here in the library for them to read, to go to the internet. And we've all seen what happens when our children go to the internet with human traffickers. They even commit suicide. Yes, you have the right to manage what your children read. You also have the right and should be with your children when they read. That is your responsibility as a parent. But to take some child who's scared to come out to a parent who's talked negatively about the LGBTQIA and take away a safe environment for them to be able to learn if they are that way or are not that way, you're doing your child a discredit. And you're taking away what I took an oath to do, which was to protect the 14th Amendment, along with every other amendment in there.
30 seconds.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ma'am?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't get my name. Deanna Charette, C-H-A-R-E-T-T. And I live at 8181 Fairlane Drive.
Thank you so much.
And those who wish to speak, you have 3 minutes is the legal time.
Anyone else? Okay, we are now closing public comment, and we'll turn it over to Michelle for the director's report.
Yes, ma'am. So if you look in your packet, you will see an updated general fund and budget actual. This is 2 years to date of May 31st, because as of right now, we are doing a reconciliation of June. So this is accurate as of May 31st, while the audit of the accountant is doing June. So as of right now, this is just a snippet just to show you that we are still in budget where we the original budget was and the actual budget year to date, the percentage of the budget that we have in total revenue gained so far, and then just highlights of the expenditures and the operating budgets. We have not had to amend anything or change any of the budget as of this month. So if y'all have any questions about the budget, then just let me know.
Michelle, can Dustin or somebody on staff just provide us copies of these, since we can't take these binders?
Yeah, of the budget.
Larry, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Before you leave, I'll make a copy.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. So, y'all have any questions about the budget as it is right now? And we'll do a more extensive budget in November. So this is just to give you an idea of where we are right now.
Yes, ma'am.
So just an idea of the next item for me is statistical updates. Just where we are as of right now, with the millage coming up, I thought it would be important for us to look at a 10-year review of where we've been and where we're going. So right now, as of yesterday, when we pulled these numbers,
2013 to 2022,
the library visits are 3,176,344 people have graced our doors in the last 10 years. Physical and electronic circulations, we have done 35,316 actual circulations. In-person and virtual programming, we've done 13,000 programs year-to-date. In the last 10 years. In-person and virtual programming attendances, 317,000 people have graced our programs. The library visits average 317,000, a little over that, in the last 10 years. That averages about 860 people plus a day grace our doors. Circulation averages about 1,700,000 per year from 2013 to 2022. Let's see. What are some other good numbers y'all would like to know about? Anything else? The in-person and virtual programs run each year averages out to be 1,300 programs for our citizens and an average of attendance of 31,000 people from 2013 to 2022.
That's figuring in the pandemic.
That's figuring in the pandemic when we were shut down because we did virtual programs. Mm-hmm. So our library system was not completely shut down at all during the pandemic, if no one knows that. We did virtual programs. We did curbside service. Our outreach department never stopped. We made phone calls to our elderly patrons that were in nursing homes to make sure they were okay. We, as soon as those nursing homes let us, we exchanged books with them. So your library system never shut down. We were always doing something during the pandemic. So right now, if the citizens of our parish bought everything that they came to the library to do, it would have been $136 million for everyone to buy or come in and buy everything that circulated through this library system. So as of right now, our summer reading program is exceeded our 2020, I think it was, Dustin, that was our highest. We have exceeded 2019.
Yeah. We're not done with summer reading yet.
Right.
Some of our numbers are extremely high. For instance, the Albany Springfield branch has the highest number of children signed up for summer reading in the library's history.
Yes. This year. Wow. So we have seen a huge increase in summer reading. Just, I think it was this branch when we did Barnhill Preserves, did 250 attendees to that program, just in one program, this summer. So we're very excited about the future of this library. I did want to touch on the audit. The state audit is complete. We passed with no dings whatsoever. We had a few flaws that we had to fix, which these policy changes will fix some of those things. But Miss Margaret is going to come and actually present that at the next board meeting. She was going to be out today, so she couldn't be able to be here to do that. So the legislative auditor will be here in September to present the audit. So. And do y'all have any other questions about the state of the library?
All right. On to new business. I believe we have
I'm sorry. We need to make a motion to accept the financial.
We need to.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay. Is there a motion to accept the financial report as presented?
Yeah, I make a motion to accept the financial report as presented.
That's
it. Ivy Graham?
Yes.
Kathy DeGeneres?
Yes.
Melissa Anderson?
Yes.
Larry Davis?
Yes.
Francine Smith?
Yes.
Approved?
And a statistical information to be signed. Holly keeps me straight.
Is there a motion to...
Yes, I make a motion to accept the statistical update presented by Ms. Parrish.
I second.
Ivy Graham?
Yes.
Kathy DeGeneres?
Yes.
Melissa Anderson?
Yes.
Larry Davis?
Yes.
Francine Smith?
Yes.
Statistical report is approved. On to new business. Michelle, do you want to give us an overview?
So the new business is going to be policy changes, approvals, and amendments that we have made. Some of it is, like I said, housekeeping for the legislative audit. Some is just general library day-to-day business. And then we also have some amendments for the new bill that was produced, that was voted on in the governor signed. So we are trying to make sure that we are in line for that for when it starts in August. So Dustin is going to present those to y'all one at a time. And we have it, and y'all can talk about the amendments if anything has changed. Then we can vote on them one at a time if not, he has it, so that we can do one bulk at the end if that's what we need to have.
Dustin, the floor is yours.
Well, Michelle got to do all the fun statistics. I get all of those. All right, so I'll go through briefly on this. If anybody has any questions, just stop me in the middle. So these are going to be a series of 25 amendments and adoptions of the policy sections. I'll stop and let you know which one is which on one. So the first one we're going to talk about is Code 1102, History of the Library. This is just a piece of housekeeping because this one hadn't been updated since 2016.
So this is just goes over a couple of additions, which we did with the Denham Springs addition was finished, was on or added. We also eliminated overdue fines for the big highlights in the e-card systems and the reintroduction of the bookmobile, which is the first one we've had since 1976. Does anybody have any questions about that one? So code 1105, this is also an amendment to replace the Board of Control meeting quota as bi-monthly instead of quarterly. I think this has already been in process for years. This is also just a piece of housekeeping to go ahead and codify that in our policy. Anybody have any questions? Okay. So code 2202 is bylaws of the Board of Control. This is to codify what you guys had already voted for earlier in the year, which was to add the moment of silence, Pledge of Allegiance, and also approval of minutes, I think, wasn't on there, which we added in, along with public comments on the agenda.
Dustin, just going back, Michelle, I talked to Ivy briefly. Is that moment of silence going to change since the council just made that resolution for prayer?
So y'all, you have to, if you want to make it a moment of prayer instead of a moment of silence, the board actually has to vote on that, because the council can make a suggestion, and which is what they did, and y'all can either keep it the way it is, or y'all can vote to make it actually say prayer. So that's up to y'all.
I'll add it back next in September then.
Okay. And this also sets the board meeting time of 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, which I believe y'all also voted on. Okay. So code 2202A, which is also an amendment to reflect modern updated public meeting standards. This was something that the previous administration had done, but we never got a chance to bring it to the board. So this is some changes for such as public comments must be related to agenda items, which require the vote of the board. Persons wishing to speak must speak their name, and they wanted to change it to parish of residence, not necessarily complete address. Also, any mentions of board chair were removed to represent board president, which is what our policy manual goes through and says. And then we had a couple of other changes on there that were just pro forma. Also, it says in the absence of president, the board vice president shall have discretion. Does anybody have any specific questions about this one? Okay. So moving on to 2218, amendment for credit cards. This one is really just to give the board more discretion on who is going to get assigned credit cards. Because we had such a hard time getting this sorted out whenever we lost both of the director and assistant director prior to and getting all sorted out, this is just to not assign it to a specific job title in the system and allowing the board to do that in the event that they have another upheaval or tumult.
So we can do it through resolutions?
Yes. So anybody have any questions about that one? All right.
That was fun.
Yeah. So code 2223, ethics training. This one's just an amendment to update that our human resources manager also helps take care of the filing of certificates for ethics and also references the ethics policy. Anybody have any questions on that one? This is part of the housekeeping for the make the legislative auditor happy. Okay. So code 226, this would be an adoption. This is to better fulfill the requirements as outlined by the legislative auditor. And this is just it's the complete thing of what the ethics training is. It's just the sexual harassment. This is just to codify what we were already doing, because we always passed all that stuff for the legislative auditor, but we didn't have it delineated that we were actually doing the training in our policy. So that's what this is to answer. Anybody have any questions about that one? Okay. 3301, services of the library. I know this one's coming up later on another one, but we would like to remove the Sunday hours at the Denham Springs Walker branch and add the following two services: iPad tablets and the Seed Library at the Albany Springfield branch. Anybody have any questions about this one?
Yeah, what are those two? What are you saying with the iPad and Seed Library? What's that?
We're going to come to that. So the iPad tablets is part of what Giovanni had done whenever he got a grant and got
a thousand iPads
is part of a digital literacy thing to help people learn how to use digital devices and stuff and work on digital literacy through digital navigators. It's through the Board of Regents. And,
1,000 iPads?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
you can
so
check them out.
We got tasked with implementing those to be checked out and used in programs, which we're now ready to roll out. But that has to be codified in policy.
Yeah. Y'all have to vote on that before we can roll out that policy and have that implemented.
Okay. Anybody got any other questions about that one? The Seed Library, that's what it is. It's the Seed Library. The Albany Springfield branch is the only one that does it right now. So we have seeds. If anybody wants to come in, you know, farmers or amateur gardeners can come in and get seeds or leave seeds. I actually donated 5 or 6 packets of heirloom seeds the other day, too. So that's just a service that we've continued on from previous branch managers there, and we'd like to continue it. But it never was codified in policy. All right, so 3302 is an amendment for a description of the collection. This is to more accurately describe the youth collection's approximate school-grade reading levels. And all it is for the young adult books to be approximately for grades 7 through 12, and then for the children's books to be approximately from infancy through 6th grade.
So I do have a question about that. So you have X, which is juvenile, and then you have XF.
So typically preschool fiction. Yeah.
Right. So it's going to be XF and X goes up.
That's considered as children's books.
Right. Yes. So 6th grade. Okay. Or 7th grade.
7th grade would be 7th through 12th would now be in a young adult.
Why? Okay. All right.
So just to ask, if we're going, I mean, science says that majority of the brain's maturity is not until like the 20s or after 18. Mm-hmm. So why are we saying 7th through 8th is considered like young adult? Would young adult be like able to drive and to be a young adult?
That constitutes teenage level. So yeah, there are teenagers in high school that drive.
Well, why is just a, it doesn't really mean like they're, well, they are young adults.
Yeah. Dustin, just to clarify what that means.
I think it's just the designation for the call number.
Any other questions on service?
No, sir.
It's a literary term that libraries and booksellers have come up with.
So code 3306 is challenge materials. This is an amendment to change the code numbers associated with complaint restriction forms and to codify an appeal form. We already had this in place. I'm just trying to streamline this and make it a little bit more intuitive for patrons to be able to use. So this changes our code form for the reconsideration of library material form to 3309, updates our user registration complaint form to 3309B, and also this introduces an appeal form, which is also going to be part of the upcoming Louisiana Revised Statute 25225. So this is something that I had proposed to the previous administration in February, but unfortunately in the tumult, I never got to meet with them, so this is just now getting put in here. And it also adds to that the Board of Control shall be notified of challenges to the material and collection, which you guys already are, but will also be notified of any appeals of previous decisions.
So just the other clarification on SB 7, I think we have to be in, so I know we have a year to do that, but I think it says that the Board of Control has to be involved in reviewing the books.
If it is deemed
sexually
explicit.
I have that under the section.
Yeah, Dustin has it all written in for you. If it's just a regular reconsideration of pop,
if the patron says that they're concerned that this book contains sexually explicit material,
then it will
we
go
need
directly to the library, to the board, and then you will have to do exactly what the committee now does, which is read the book, make the determination, do the research, do all the things that they do, and yes. You'll
awesome.
Do, yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, any other questions about that? Because 3309 is going to play into that. 3309 is going to mean adoption to codify the complaint forms previously discussed. For process mentioned in 3306, but not added into the policy manual before. So this is going to be, I also put a delineation in here for patrons to understand the control of custody process of where this is going. So I'll just read out one of them to you guys just so you're aware of it. So the citizen's request for reconsideration of library forms pertain to patron request of reconsideration of collection materials and are processed one at a time in the order they are received in the following manner. Number one, once a patron completely fills out the form and turns it into the library branch, the staff receiving the form will immediately sign and date it, then forward it to their supervisor or branch manager. Two, the supervisor or branch manager receiving the form will review it, sign and date it, then scan the original form to retain a copy of the branch, which is actually required in our policy, so that has to stay in there. The original form is then forwarded to the administrative librarian. The administrative librarian, three, receiving the form will review it, sign and date it, then scan the original and provide a copy to the library board of control. Here's where the caveat comes in for 25225. So if the complainant indicates on the form that the material meets the criteria outlined in section C2D2 of 25225, then per that law, the Library Board of Control shall review the material and determine whether it meets the definition outlined in revised statute 25225B4 by majority vote in an open meeting. The board president or vice president will add discussion of the material to a public meeting agenda and will inform the complainant in writing of the date and time. So, Larry, that's your answer to that one. So, yeah, we do have that in there.
Thank you, Des.
The administrative librarian will convene, this is four, a reconsideration committee made up of three professional librarians within the Livingston Parish Library. The committee will research, review, and read the material in question, meet and discuss it, and present a recommendation report to the administrative librarian. And number five, the administrative librarian will read and consider the reconsideration committee's report and review the material. Then come to a decision based on the complainant's request, providing a written decision to them and a copy to the Library Board of Control. So, does anybody have any questions about this process? Or
is that public? Do we know who's on that committee right now, Michelle?
No, that's just made up of librarians as we need, whenever we convene, like when we get a request. Whoever's available that has a library degree in the library will make up that.
So it alternates, or it's just whoever's available around in the room at that time?
Well, you know, if you have time and you can be on the committee, then yes, we do that.
I do have a question.
Sure.
This is great. My only concern is, I know some people, may get challenge happy and challenge like 30 books at one time, and we have to read these.
That's correct. The board will have to read and review those.
Yeah. Is there a way to like limit, like,
no, say, state law, SB7, we have to read it.
I'm not saying I'm not going to read it. I'm saying, can we limit the number of challenges, like, say, to a quarter, you know?
How many we have to respond to per
right,
quarter.
Right, right.
Are you asking for a specific number based on a specific patron requesting?
Right, right. Because, you know, if somebody challenges 30 books, I can't read 30 books in, by the next board meeting. So, I don't have a problem with them challenging 30 books. I'm just saying, can we spread it out?
Well, if the board agrees to add that on there, I can add that. Do you guys have like a set number in there that you wanted to add to a patron per calendar year?
What's the specific? What are we adding?
She wants to add a limit to the reconsideration request forms that one person can submit at a time.
Not that one person can submit, that we would have to read in a set amount of time.
So between one board meeting to the next board meeting,
what
you
would
get
be?
Five done, or however many. Okay.
Right.
Or you just respond
if 30
to
books
the,
come in.
Once we get done reading the book, or respond to we're done reading the book.
Yeah,
I don't think
right,
a,
but if we get,
is there a time limit set on
no,
y'all?
No, as of right now, we don't set
correct.
A time limit because
correct.
Sometimes we only have one copy and that has to go through everyone.
So there's
so
nothing to
as
change.
Long as, yeah, as long as the board is aware that it will take however long it takes for one person to read, review, and do all the research and then pass it on to the next one if we only have one copy. If we have five, then, you know.
Yep.
That is, That would be up to, as long as the board is in agreement to that, I don't think that's anything that you really have to put in policy, that you know that that's how long it's going to take.
Okay, so there's not going to be any time constraint. So if it takes us 6 months to get through the first book, there's no penalty, is what I'm saying. Because I just don't want to be...
I mean, if you're going by what the new law would be in August, or, you know, when we have the year to make it, no, they don't give a time frame for those things, and they don't give an amount of how many you can and you can't submit. Those are all kind of subject to the board, and that's kind of what their the state library has requested, that the Attorney General's office give them an opinion on, and I don't think any of that has come down yet. And that's something that we had talked about, that if those things happen, then we can always revise our policy to match what is
yeah.
given as an opinion. So
I do want to point out that we're being proactive with this. There are several library systems in the state who have decided to wait for the state library to get an opinion piece from the Attorney General's office about exact wording of what needs to be in their policy. The way that I view it, and Michelle agrees with me too, we're going to go ahead and get this. The law starts into effect on August 1st. Now, I know we have time to do it. We want to go ahead and get it in policy now. Okay, and if we have to change it at a later date, then the Attorney General says, well, this needs to be worded this way. We'll just put it back on the agenda and the board will vote to change the policy. That's the way that we're looking at it.
Well, then this is fine. This is fine the way that it is.
Just whichever one was first, that's the one we work on first.
Right, and that's how the committee.
Yeah, we do first in, first out.
First in, first out. Yeah.
So I'm not going to go over all of this stuff, but the registration of user complaint form, I cleaned this up a little bit. Some of the patrons weren't sure what form this was being used for. So this is if somebody has a complaint regarding a policy, a program, a display, staff, or an individual, then that's what this form is for. This isn't for collection materials. That's what we have the consideration for.
Awesome.
So, and then form 3309C.
Yeah, we have a question. Can we ask a question?
Will the book remain off the shelf until it's evaluated and determined the...
Yes, because it will be used. We'll be using it to read it to make sure, yeah. Well, it'll be off the shelf. Yes, ma'am.
But if there's, like, 10 copies of the book...
Well, then they're all going to get a copy to read.
What if there's 20 copies? I mean, are some of the books going to be on the shelf until it's evaluated?
And that will be up to the board. I mean, you know, the one person might be...
I think that's fair. I think that's even in legal practice. If you're accused of something, you're put on leave until it's investigated. So I think we should do the same thing with the book. But we can evaluate that as we go. It's a great question. Thank you.
We have one more
I think in general, most... Just to comment to that, I think for the most part, we don't have 20 copies of this. In most cases, if it's a popular book, like a James Patterson or something like that, we might have 2 copies at each branch. Getting to code 3309, which is the appeal reconsideration, which we did not have prior to this, it just sets out an appeal process. So basically, once a patron completely fills out a form, that they want to challenge a reconsideration decision. This was going to go the same process. It goes to the branch manager, goes up to Michelle, and she's going to inform the board. After the board members have time to read and review the material in its entirety, the board president, board vice president, or administrative librarian will add discussion of the appeal as new business on the agenda for the next regular meeting of the Library Board of Control, where the full board will decide regarding the appeal via majority vote. The complainant will be informed in writing of the date and time of the meeting where the appeal will be discussed as a courtesy to them so they can show up and have a discussion. Form 3309C can only be submitted once per reconsideration decision. After the Board of Control has addressed a specific appeal at a regular meeting, multiple attempts to appeal after the first will be denied. Does anybody have any other questions about this section? This should bring us fully in line with revised statute 25225. And then I have example forms in there for y'all of what the patrons will see whenever they get them. All right. Moving on to code 3315, which is circulation services. This is another amendment. This is something that the library system has debated for a year or two now. I know the management team prior to this was trying to get the administration to move forward on this. We want to change the age range for teens to be age 13 to 17. Because right now in policy it is 12 to 17. And so what this is just basically changing the age range for that on library card services and for juveniles to be 12 or younger. Not 13.
I think we're going to have another policy change, too, to just up that age for unaccompanied minor.
Yeah, that's
so.
Yes,
yeah, so I had a question about that.
Sure.
13 to just be dropped off at the library?
Right now they're dropping. Okay, so let me give you an example of this was near and dear to me because I manage Main Branch. It's right across the street from Dole High School. So sixth grade is where Doyle High School starts. So these children are coming over, sometimes 11, you know, maybe even a little bit younger because they're on that age group, and they're coming over to the library unaccompanied. They're walking from the school, and they're there. So right now our policy is 12.
Mm-hmm.
It's still too young, in my opinion.
So I think from what somebody said very impassioned earlier, we're not a babysitter. So
right.
If we work with our law enforcement or something, I honestly think that the age should be 18, even to go with our GDL laws in the state, to where you cannot be unaccompanied in the library.
But
that's reckless endangerment anywhere
you
else.
You can't really do that because you have 16-year-olds who drive.
and can go in.
But the GDL law said that they have to be accompanied by a parent or guardian. So 18 lets you legally drive without any supervision or a curfew. Well, so that's what I'm saying.
I mean, I have teenagers. I have a 16 and 17-year-old, and they're driving.
Well, you're breaking the law if you're not following the GDL law. The GDL law at 18 says... At 16 says that you have to have a person with you and you cannot drive between 5 a.m. and 11 p.m., I believe. I can relook it up. But I'm just saying that we shouldn't just have kids in the library.
And you know, that's...
Because who's watching the kids?
We're giving 13 to 17 because that is where, you know, where we know to start. So this is a policy that we're recommending. So if you want to recommend 18, then the board can recommend that. But then that is also having an employee there to check IDs every time someone comes in the library. So, you know, that's more employees. That's, there are caveats to all of that. So, I mean, that's, we're
just making
a recommendation.
It protects you and your staff.
Right. Well, and we're making a recommendation that we can live with as far as people coming in, young kids coming across the street from the high school. So, that, I mean, it's a policy for y'all to vote on. So if y'all want to amend that or if y'all want to change that, that's the board to decide. But... I mean, this is our recommendation. Is all we can do.
Well, yes. This section is technically just who's qualified for a library card.
This is the conversation.
But there is further down to recommend.
3315A is just the change library card definition of the teen library card. Ages 13 to 17, minor library card or juvenile.
Can you read point eight for me, please?
What we mean?
Point two, teen, number two, teen, it says what's required for that 13 to 17 to receive the library card. What's that point eight say?
It says parent, legal guardian, or other responsible party age 18 or above must sign for the card with the understanding that they are responsible for materials borrowed. Okay. Any damaged or lost materials become the physical responsibility of the minor signing.
What was the age?
18 or above. For, okay. You have to be 18 or above to sign up.
To sign for a card. Okay.
So this also is going to add a section D to both of those card descriptions, which is the responsible party must fill out a materials restriction form, as outlined in 315B, to set the desired access level for library collections and electronic resources. So then getting to 315B is the library cards and rights of parents, and I'm going to read out this section that we want to add. In order for the library to provide caregivers with additional tools to make the best and most informed decisions for their minor children, all responsible parties for juvenile and teen cards must fill out and sign a materials restriction form to set their desired access level for library collections and electronic resources. A new materials restriction form must be filled out to change their minor's child's access level upon request or whenever a child moves from the juvenile card age range to teen. Basically, we think it's the best idea that the parents, even if the kid moves to being a teen age-wise, the parents' responsibility is to see what they want their kids to consume. So that's why we're leaving that in there like that. So the materials restriction form has two sections, a print materials restriction and a digital materials restriction. And so what that's going to do is create two different sub-variants. You're either going to be a juvenile restricted or a teen restricted if your parent or legal guardian decides that you can't read specific sections. So juvenile restriction changes the account type and prohibits checkout of items from the teen, the YA area, and adult collections, as well as access to some of the databases. And the teen restriction restricts and prohibits checkout items from adult collections, as well as some of the databases. And so then the parents also have the option to go with digital materials restriction, so either no restriction, or they can opt that their child gets a restricted card. This is going to be a special card with a special prefix. It's the only way that we could get some of our database vendors to work and be able to lock accounts. So what this is a patron is issued a new card starting with an 889 prefix that prohibits access to the following library collections and digital media, which includes Hoopla, Comics Plus, Canopy, Creative Bug, JobNow, VetNow, Overdrive, and Libby, and Cloud Library. So does anybody have any questions about the materials restriction form? This is something that Giovanni and Jennifer had promoted and that the management team in the fall of last year proactively, unanimously supported in the background that we proactively instituted at the beginning of the year. This just codifies what we're already doing. So,
for those of you that may not understand what he just read, this puts the ball in the parent's court to decide what your child can and cannot check out. You can have a 16-year-old that cannot check out the young adult books. The reason they're labeled young adult is because there's young adult content. So if you don't want your child reading that, all you have to do is not sign for them. You can put them on the restrictions. This is a good thing.
So then the final section of the 315 is for F, which is circulation periods and limitations, and this just adds iPads as a checkout circulating material to adult, staff, senior citizen, and educator borrower types. Okay, does anybody have any other questions about 315? Okay. So 316 is e-cards, and this is also an amendment. This is basically just a clarification. We separated this for adult e-cards. It's a service we offer to patrons in the parish that they still have to be 18 or older and approve that they live in the in the parish, but they can get an e-card and they don't have to physically come into a library branch and get a card. We have a verification system for that at the administrative offices. And then we separate the second section into the student e-cards, which is what Outreach has worked with since 2019 to get the LPPS students access to databases. Anybody have any questions about this? It's just separated into two sections. Three 328 is an amendment to the electronic resource access policy. This just literally changes the, it says that children under the age of 13 will be required to have a parent or adult guardian present when using a computer workstation. Okay. Code 3335, which is, we want to change the name to community engagement. It is currently considered programming. We now have a head of community engagement when we merged the former heads of adult services and youth services into one new head. So we want to rename this section to community engagement. This also changes the age limit defined by teen programming as 13 to 18, and juvenile programming is defined as 0 to 12. And also adds the caveat that professional staff under the guidance of the head of community engagement shall be responsible for planning and executing programs at the direction of the administrative librarian. Does anybody have any questions on this one? So code 3337, C, iPads, is what we want to add to specialty collections, and this is the delineation of what the iPads are going to be. So the lending of iPads is going to be limited to adult, staff, educator, and senior citizen cards for now. If we may reevaluate next year. But that's how we want to start it off with, because we want a certain level of responsibility when somebody checks one of these out. The patron account must be more than 6 weeks old. The account must be in good standing, which means that they can't have a balance of $10 or more. They can't have more than two overdue items, and the account is not expired. iPads cannot be checked out to the same patron within 14 days of their last return. So we want a little buffer there so everybody has a chance to check out an iPad. So we think there's going to be an initial rush on them. Only one iPad at a time may be checked out per account, and holds and renewals are not allowed. So these things are going to check out for 1 6-week period, which is a long time to have a digital device. We want people to be able to check out these. It's like, especially one of the things we wanted, we have a bunch of senior patrons in the system that are interested in e-content databases, but they don't necessarily, either don't want to read it on their phone, or they don't want to invest in an e-device. This is a chance for them to check it out. They can use Hoopla or Cloud Library, something like that.
So we're just checking out libraries. I mean, we're checking out iPads to the elderly.
Because we're rolling it out slowly, because there's 1,000 of them, and we also have to get them all up to date and have all of the apps and all that put on them and see how it goes. This is the first time we were doing anything like this, so. This is where we want to start and see how it goes. I mean, if it looks like it's going to be something that takes off, then we're going to move it. We'll move it into different areas. But right now, we just want to dip our toes in the water.
What are we hoping to gauge? So you said if it kicks off, but what are we hoping to gauge if we're just giving out iPads?
So, I mean, we're not just giving out iPads. We want to see what the community actually wants on those iPads. Like, we know right now that a lot of our senior citizens like to read on their iPad, on their phones and their digital devices. So we have Hoopla and Cloud already in place on those things. Will homeschoolers, parents with homeschool children, would they like to see like ABC Mouse, things like that on them. So it's just to kind of gauge to see what the community's interests are going to be, what we need to put on those, what do we need to take off. If it even takes off, people may say, I already have an iPad, I don't even want to do this. But it was a, you know, a, our biggest focus right now, too, is to help the Career Center, too, because we have a lot of individuals coming in who need help with job searches and learning how to use a device at all. I mean, we have so many that don't, they, using a computer is not their thing.
Yeah. And to be clear, not all 1,000 of these iPads are rolling out for checkout.
Right.
We're also using some of these in coordination with some of our programs, like the Career Center. The digital navigators are going to have some at each branch set aside for programming. And then we also have set aside, I believe, 30 for ESL.
Yes.
And we're getting headphones for them, so whenever they're doing the ESL programs, they can talk and respond on the software to help them learn. Mm-hmm. So we're working on that. And we also have, there's another one I was getting at.
We have a couple, and we're talking about actually just having them in the library to check out for the day for teens who come in after school and things like that so that they can check them out and they can use them within the library. So kind of like what they do with headphones now where they'll just get them and they use them for just the afternoon while they're there and then they bring them back to us. So we're just trying to see what works first before we just go, oh, here's...
Yeah, I like the in-house checkout rather than the take-home.
Well, we're trying to get people to also coordinate this. Like, if, especially if people, somebody who's not necessarily elderly but has never used a digital device at all. So we do have a lot of patrons like that. They can get one, they can set up a book a librarian session with a staff member, or they can set up, go to one of our digital navigator classes to learn how to use a digital device and still have it. And then go home and practice on it, too. That's another idea we have.
And starting with the adults and the educators and things like that, we will also see how they come back.
How they come back.
You know, because we have to get, you know, they have to come back. So having a little bit of responsibility is important right now. And then as they get older, then, as, you know, the teens start taking them home and something happens, it's not as expensive after a while. So this is just to see how it goes.
And we also, we had some old Nooks in the system, which were a little old, which we had used as e-readers for patients before. Those are getting really dated, and they have problems keeping up with some of our software. So this is going to be a phase out for those, and we'll be able to check these out still. Does anybody have any other questions about iPads?
And this will help the adult services that are already offered, because I know Ms. Chiantia helps. She does classes individually older people that come in, and they're at a computer, and she's having to lean over their shoulder and try to reach for the mouse and everything the way it's set up.
And
so with this, it would be so much easier for her to sit at the table one-on-one and walk people through it.
And how do we pay for that?
We got a grant.
Oh, you remember?
Federal government?
Yeah, it was through... It was in coordination with...
It was a partnership with a bunch of groups.
A bunch of different...
Board of Regents.
The Board of Regents.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
And it was $300,000.
Okay. How much?
I think it was $300,000.
And all that went to iPads?
We had to spend it a certain...
The grant had to be allocated towards...
$300,000. Okay.
So 3341 is Career Center. This one is just to clean up some of the policy because this was a new service we had offered last year, or I believe started last year. This is to clean up some of the stuff. Number 7, it was a little draconian. We had that if you missed a couple of appointments, you couldn't use the services on there at all. We changed that. It's just the suspension of you can't make any more appointments if you keep making your appointments, but you will come in and be served is what we changed this to. We also had some instances of people complaining about job postings being taken down or whatever. We're not really entirely sure what happened with that, but we do want to change it to where it's the discretion of the director, assistant director, or career center librarian to remove job postings if they're fraudulent or something like that. And then we also, the main thing is we also set up a career center records retention. This is to help some people. We had a couple patients that were requesting that they were able to keep a little electronic log of like what they've accomplished going through Career Center, whether that's resume writing, job searching like that. So basically this just codifies that, and we have a little paper form they sign that says that we will retain their records for up to a year for them. Does anybody have any questions about this section? All right, so this one's a big one. So this is branch hours, 4401. This is an amendment to formally remove Sunday hours from the Dumb Springs Walker branch, but at the same time to extend Saturday hours at the main branch, the South Branch, and Albany Springfield branch from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. So this, the big thing was that this would make the branch schedules for Maine, South, and Albany all the same and uniform. And also extends our hours more to the central, south, and eastern sides of the parishes, which currently have the least amount of library hours allocated. Does anybody have any questions about this one?
Michelle, how was the feedback from that? I know you've been testing it for a couple of months.
Yeah, we have had really good response, no pushback from it, one or two people, but that was it. Like, literally, I think I got two comments.
Okay.
So
moving on to code 4404, minors children left in the library. This is the section that Mr. Davis had mentioned earlier. Children, we want to change it to children under the age of 13 must be accompanied by a parent or caregiver. That's literally the only change we're making for that section. All right. So 4405, problem patrons, code of conduct. This is making it inappropriate for patrons to leave their children under the age of 13 unattended on library premises. So that's all that's adding to that. Okay. So amendment to 5521, employee conduct, disciplinary action, and dismissal. In order for us to fulfill legislative auditor best practices, we needed to add a section that shows that violation of ethics is a disciplinary offense. So we added to number 5, BB, being found in violation of the ethics policy 5571 after investigation is grounds for disciplinary action and or dismissal. You might have any questions on that. Okay. Code 5545 is an amendment to the holiday schedule for next year. We would like to add Veterans Day, November 11th, back as a holiday. We have received feedback from patrons, including some Vietnam veterans of the Albany Springfield branch, that were a little perturbed that we were not closed on Veterans Day last year and the year before. And then if we take the Sunday hours away from Denham, none of the branches will be open on Sunday. We would like to move the Easter Sunday that the system would normally get off to be the Saturday before Easter. So that would mean staff would have Good Friday and the Saturday before Easter off. Do I have any questions on that one? Okay, the rest of them are all just the standard holidays we already have. So 5565 is dress code amendment. We had been, I know the previous administration had tried to move forward. We had been allowing staff to wear jeans for a while now, and everybody finds that, we, you know, it's nice to be able to wear jeans some days at work. So we would like to remove jeans as prohibited clothing for library staff, and then put a couple of amendments in here that says T-shirts cannot be worn unless they are library or summer reading branded. And you know, we also want to add short skirts as prohibited dress, as well as Crocs and flip-flops. And then a couple of other small things here. At the discretion of the administrative librarian, we want staff to be able to engage in themed or holiday attire days with specific allowances for what constitutes appropriate attire. I think like ugly sweater, Christmas Day is what we're thinking here. Stuff like that, or I know occasionally, yeah.
Favorite
or
team day.
Like we'll have a favorite team sports day or something like that. At large library events such as Comic-Con and Book Festival, all staff working those events will be required to wear library-branded T-shirts that match, unless specifically authorized not to by the administrative librarian. We want to do this for safety and security reasons, too. So if somebody's at a large event, they will know a staff member by seeing the shirt. And they say staff on them very bigly on the bags. Staff working at branches should also always have either a library lanyard or name badge on at all times to identify themselves to patrons. This was already in practice. We just want code 5. Anybody have any questions about dress code change? Okay.
I have a question. Who defines how short the skirt is?
Not obscene. Something that's not obscene. I mean, yeah.
We used to find that, though.
You
know, we used to measure them. Who's going to do that? I can just see it. It doesn't bother me, but I can see it coming up.
Well, I mean, it's not. It really is not an issue we've had. It just wasn't a policy.
Yeah, we already had shorts as prohibited clothing. So.
Oh, I was talking about short skirts, not short.
Yeah.
So code 5568 is a harassment policy amendment. This just says, this just adds the thing that library employees are required to undertake an annual harassment training as outlined in 2226, which is the adoption form. This is for best practices for legislative auditor, and also to add disciplinary action for claims of sexual harassment that are intentionally false. That was something that they had asked us about a couple of times, so that is now in here. Disciplinary action up to and including discharge may result if it is determined that a claim of sexual harassment was intentionally false. Okay, does anybody have any questions on that one? So the last one, I know this one's like 3 pages long. This is an ethics policy, which will be an adoption, so this is a new one, Code 5571. This is to really make the legislative auditor happy, and this shows that the library adheres to the Louisiana Code of Government and Ethics, which we already did, but this codifies it in policy. In order to ensure public confidence in its integrity and its impartiality, to make sure decisions and policy are made in the proper channel and structure, and to ensure public employment is not used for private gain. Depending on the circumstances, verified violations of this policy will result in corrective action up to and including discharge. Library employees are required to undertake an annual ethics training as outlined in 2.23. And basically, this is the legislative auditor's summary of Louisiana Revised Statute 42.1111 through 1121. And this comes directly from them, all this verbiage. So this is just to codify what we already do as far as our ethics policy. Does anybody have any questions about this section? And that was the last one. Does anybody have any other questions about any of these questions?
Any questions, guys?
Okay.
So someone just makes a motion.
You can make a motion to adopt it as in globo, or you can read through each individual code.
Yeah, in globo.
Citizen question.
Okay.
There's three things I'd like to cover that was mentioned by Cotton. If the board would consider defining the eval on the books. I think it was mentioned that if 30 books get turned in, you guys don't have time to do it. I would like you guys to define that these books be pulled until evaluated and a decision is made from all locations. Second, how do you protect the iPad if it gets checked out, meaning off the confines of this facilities, and it goes home to somebody?
So,
is there a price?
So there, I mean, yeah, you will. It's like if you lose a book, you will be charged for it. But they go in a home in a protective case, and we have and we have a system in place that if you do not bring it back within your 14 days, it can be turned off.
Yeah, we can remote.
We can remotely.
And what's the replacement cost? What would they be charged?
I think it's $350.
Can you buy one?
Nope.
Okay. My third item would be is to use the rule of thumb that the parish is using in the school system for that skirt length that we gauge it. So is that fair?
I think there just may be overthought on our employees and what they are currently wearing to work. We don't have teenagers, and then we're having issues with short skirts.
Okay, so why is the skirt an issue?
It's just to update the dress code, I think, was what, as Dustin presented.
Okay, so it's not an issue.
Above the knee, I mean, I was just using the school as a reference to gauge that by.
I see what you're saying.
And I think that's a good rule of thumb if you wanted to use that.
Well, I don't know if you've been to a school. They're pretty short, and I don't think the women here are wearing skirts that short.
I don't know what the rule is, but yeah. Good heavens.
I think
where do you get the consistency from then in this statement?
It's probably more along the lines of just you use your best judgment when you get dressed for work. I mean, you know, like teachers, most professionals have
dress codes,
you know, and this is just standard verbiage usually in most dress codes. Because, you know, you never know. There's going to be that one person that gets hired and, you know, they show up, you know, with something up to here. And then they're like, well, it wasn't in the dress code, so they're saying no short skirts. I think that's just the idea behind it.
So on the onboarding guidelines of a new employee, where will it be stated to define that?
You have to read the policy when you get hired. You have to read the entire policy.
And I don't have that with me, so that's why I'm asking.
Right. We have to sign the policy when you're hired. That was part of your onboarding, is to read the entire policy manual, and you have to sign it.
Okay.
say that you read it and you agreed to the policy.
So that's going to be stated in there, the dress code?
It's already, yes.
Okay. Right. That's good. I just didn't know if you needed to define that somewhat, because I know someone's going to argue that.
That's a good question.
Okay. You've got it in place.
Thank you for bringing it up. It's a good question.
Which link are y'all suggesting?
So, as a professional librarian, this would be my question. We have seen over in St. Tammany that three citizens have challenged over 200 books from just three citizens. They are going, it is taking them 5 books per month. So essentially, if someone comes in and challenges 200 books, and it takes 2 or 3 years, and you have removed those books from the shelves, and those books contain, Charette was talking about the 14th Amendment, those books contain marginalized communities like the LGBTQ community and the Black and Indigenous people of color, you're opening yourself up to a huge lawsuit, and that actually constitutes a book ban, which is against the law. So I'm worried that someone's going to come in like they did in St. Tammany and challenge 200 books, and those books are off the shelf for 2 or 3 years. That would be my concern, that I would ask the board to think about that.
So if you're not familiar with what St. Tammany did, is when they do have one, they pull them from the shelves and they put them behind the desks. And people can still check them out if the board does not have them to do the review, and then they can check them out from there. So that also is just a decision the board has to make.
So they're just removed from the bookshelf and placed behind the thing.
Right.
My question is, whenever somebody launches an investigation on something, like, you know, what happens when you launch an investigation? Don't you typically, you know, if a teacher's accused of, you know, sexual harassment,
it's not sexual.
But if it offends one, and it can offend many.
But it might not offend anyone else. I mean, you know, it just depends on who.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm comfortable if one person is offended by a book, we're going to take it away from everybody else who might enjoy the book.
And when they have the ability to just leave it on the shelf.
Yeah, just leave it on the shelf, you know.
Just a question.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I was wrong about SB 7, too, and it passed, so I'm glad the governor signed it.
Concerning the checking out of the iPads, we've been checking out laptops in public schools for a couple of years now, and it works very well. The children that are in communities that don't have Wi-Fi, et cetera, and they don't have access to this, they take those home, they sign a document saying, hey, I'm responsible for this, and they come back in good working order. I was surprised.
They check out Wi-Fi, too.
They check out Wi-Fi, too.
They have a sign saying that they take responsibility for that.
I appreciate the safeguarding protocol that you have in place. It
right.
It's clearly stated, so that's why.
And I was surprised that they were not broken. They come back at the end of the year. They turn them in just like you turn in textbooks, but with the understanding that if it's not in working order, you have to pay for this. But it works really well.
$297.
So in this policy, you're adding or altering the Easter holiday, which is nothing more than to honor the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's what the holiday is intended for. But you can't adopt a prayer before a meeting. How does that make sense? Can I answer that?
We did a moment of silence if Mr. Larry.
Yeah, anybody who wants to pray is welcome to pray.
And why are you celebrating Easter?
I'm pretty sure
it's
a federal holiday.
It's not the death and resurrection of Satan, it's the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ.
Actually, I think it was your suggestion, the moment of silence.
Yes, but it was my moment of silence, because y'all were not agreed on the moment of
prayer. But I'm asking the question, not her.
I was just answering your question.
It's
a valid question.
Nobody would agree on a moment of prayer. So in order for someone to be able to pray to themselves, that's why I offer. And I'm glad that y'all did it, because I sat here whenever first opened up, and I prayed to my God. And other people can pray to whoever they want to. But the thing is, if you're going to observe one thing, then you're going to knock the other.
Right, so I asked the question. I don't agree with her. I don't believe it should be a moment of silence. I believe it should be a prayer. So if you're celebrating Easter, you should be able to adopt a prayer before meeting. It makes no sense to have one and not the other.
and I guess we celebrate Yom Kippur Sabbath.
Hanukkah.
Yeah, put it on, yeah, put it on the calendar and
sure.
Take a day off for it.
Yes, ma'am.
So if we're going to observe prayer, and this is just from a military point of view, that means if we have somebody who's a Buddhist or a Muslim, they want to pray, or even any of those, at that time we're going to honor them to allow them to do that too, correct?
And that was the discussion that came up, that she came up with a lovely solution.
I like the moment of silence.
Right.
I do. I agree with that.
That was a compromise until you can find out exactly what you, and you really shouldn't compromise on things like that, but nobody would do for prayer.
Right. It is a public library, therefore to cover, but I see what you're saying. If it's a public library, why are we doing Easter Christmas?
Right. And they do still pray in the Congress, and I mean, they even have a chaplain, I think, of the United States Congress.
Yeah. So I still haven't gotten a sense.
It just seems like this area doesn't want to pray off for Easter or not
pray. Mr. Norrie, you had a question?
Yeah, I had one question on the review process of the books. As it goes through and it goes over the final review, is there anybody from the public that gets to review it and work with the librarians, or is it just all the librarians to make the decision?
It's the librarians to make the decision.
What about the board?
And the board, well, when, now that this has come into play, then yes, the board will make that decision now if it is deemed sexually explicit according to the new law. But as of right now...
Yeah, and so, and but to answer your question a little more, you would be involved where if you checked out a book and you said, I don't like this, that's when you would write the reconsideration and you would list out all the things that you found problematic with the book.
Neutral person from the public to somebody else that's in the public, maybe the board like this, but let them look at it. They're, yeah, I see what this person's saying, what they wrote. When I read the book, I don't see it that way. You know, and you, it would add more strength to your case.
But,
I guess is what I'm
but then it's, and then it's who's neutral decision, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why it becomes the board's decision. And then you have the right as a citizen when we bring it up for... when they bring it up for their debate to say exactly how you feel about that book. So you'll have public comment in order to do that and maybe sway their decision or not.
And those five books will get paid extra for that month.
An incentive to get
through. I wanted to bounce off of Ms. Francine over here for a second. She said if the books are pulled, there are others that would still want to read it. Would there be a list saying which ones were pulled just in case any of us were interested in, so that we didn't know they were all checked out or something?
So that's another caveat that we're going to have to look at as to putting what is challenged on our website and letting the public know what is under review. So that is something that we are going to have to work on. That, you know, how are we going to put it out there for y'all to be able to know what's on review and what's not?
Yes. And some of this is probably also waiting from the state library on our implementation policies. This is us just trying to get ahead of the curve.
Right.
There may be additional,
and there may be additional
rules that come out that we have to
take away. We
that may address a lot of these questions that we don't know at this time.
This is where we are in line with everything. So.
And if it's challenged, I don't even, I mean, to answer a question, if it gets challenged, and somebody wants to check out that book, I think that person just needs to be let known. If we start broadcasting it, then you know what happens. I mean, if somebody wants to check out the same book that's challenged, let the library know just to tell the person that right now that book is under review. But putting it on the website, it's going to incite mob, and then it's going to become an issue. But if they don't know, they don't know. But if they genuinely want to read that book,
who's looking for the book?
What are you talking about, ma'am?
If I'm trying to find the book, and
right.
I
answered the question. If you're trying to find the book, the library desk would just, you know, respond and let you know that the book is currently under review.
And you can download it from booklet to your phone.
Yeah, the problem...
Because it's being reviewed.
Well,
I want to make sure.
Yeah, the problem with that, there does actually need to be something in there, because anytime, having worked here, you know, when someone comes up to you and they say, hey, I'm looking for this book, I don't, you know, there's how many 100,000 books here. You don't know where they all are. Most people who work here go to the catalog, pull up the book, look at the call number. If it's not there, it says checked out. And you tell the person it's checked out, I can try to get it from you for somewhere else. they're going to look there and they're going to see, oh, it's on the shelf. And they're going to go there and they're going to spend I don't know how much time looking for the book, because I don't know how many times I've gone looking for a book and it wasn't on the cart and it wasn't on the shelf and it was actually at a table with somebody. You know, you just, it's easier for the people who work here to know, looking at the record, it's under review. But it should be in the record.
It could be on the record, too. I'm just saying it doesn't need to be a Facebook post that the book is being challenged.
No, I don't even think it wants to be a Facebook post. But, I mean, there, if you look at what St. Tammany's doing, that's exactly what that librarian director there has done, is she posts what is being challenged and where they are in the challenge state. So, like, right now...
in the record?
Yeah, XYZ is being challenged, and the board has it for review. And then once the board is done, then she updates it and says the board has finished its challenge, and the challenge, and this is where the decision was. So it's kind of an informative thing, not so much just broadcasting it everywhere if anybody wanted to look. Okay. But again, that's not in the new law that was written. That's something that she's done. So as this goes forward and we find that we're having issues with things, that might be stuff that the board looks at and says, okay, we might want to do that also, or there's another solution for us. I mean, this is a different time, and it's something we're working through.
So,
and we're trying to work with everyone the best we can to make sure everybody gets what they need.
I have kind of a technical question. How much do the ALA guidelines influence the book challenges and reviews for the staff or the board?
We do not get our marching orders from ALA. Or with the Louisiana Library Association. Our board makes our policies and their decisions, and that's what we do now. We go by different guidelines. We look at reviews from publishers. If you're just talking about a book in particular, we look at all things before we order a book. We look at all caveats before we even order something and see to the best of our ability. Now, you know, we might get something in that we thought was going to be great and go, oh, no. ALA is just a regular organization where people go to get ideas. It is where librarians go to see what's new in inventions for libraries. It's where you go to find out how, you know, the next big checkout or Polaris system where we use to check out books is and things like that. So it's not all just about the books. It's about other things. What's the new chair that you can buy for library use? All of those vendors go to ALA for those things. So that librarians go there to do that. We don't get our marching orders from ALA. Our board makes our policies.
I have a question about that.
Yes.
Do we receive any grant money or any kind of money at all from the ALA?
So that grant that I know that you were talking about came from AT&T. And it was facilitated by ALA. It did not come from ALA. It came from AT&T. And that is just where you sent the application in order to get that money.
The reason I ask is people that are here have asked me that question.
That
it needs to be clarified.
No, we do not get money from ALA for any reason.
No grant, no?
No.
Okay.
No.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
What about the Louisiana Library Station?
No. The Louisiana Library Association is just like ALA, but in Louisiana. We go there to get new ideas. We go there for continuing education. One of the big problems we're having right now is homeless people in the library. So we go there to find out what are the new procedures for having to take care of someone who's homeless. You know, what do we offer them? You know, those kind of things are what you go to LLA for, and ALA or PLA or any of the other. It's just a professional organization.
Is there any other discussion, or someone want to make a motion?
I have one more question.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I just wanted to reassure Ms. Smith that she's not breaking the law. The driving laws in this state say that if you're 16 and a licensed driver...
Yes, I know. Look, Denham Springs High School and Walker High and Live Oak, every high school has got a parking lot full of 16 and 17-year-olds. I know.
And even at younger ages, let's say 13, which is what you're proposing as a potential designation for young adults, at 13, you don't have to be in the presence of an adult. You don't have to have an adult with you at home. You don't have to have an adult with you if you're walking down the road to go to the store. There's no laws that say teenagers have to have adults with them. Be out and about in public, including in the library.
Okay, well, let's just let kids roam free.
Well, you can quantify maybe say 16, so that way you're kind of hitting in between. You've got the driving age range already.
I think we're going to move up. She had talked about moving it up gradually. Right now, we're just moving it up to 13.
Okay, so what's the benefit in moving it up gradually rather than just going ahead and making that
We didn't even make a motion, so how do we even know how everybody's going to vote here? I mean, we didn't even make a motion to move the age to anything, but I guess it's already decided, like many things.
Well, it was written in the policy. We're either going to vote for it or against it. We haven't voted.
But no. the question is, what is the benefit of a 13-year-old child being in this library unaccompanied by an adult? That's the question. I mean, we know that the times are different. We have human trafficking. There's just so much that the library and staff can be held accountable for. If a child goes missing from here, what's the benefit of 13 years of age?
I don't think the library is accountable if someone disappears from here.
Okay, Francine.
It would be the parents who left them here. Yeah. Actually, it says in here,
we allow, if it's in our policy that the parent can leave them here, it's going to be the parent that's responsible?
SB7.
Oh, okay.
SB7 here says that no employee or board of control member will be held liable for anything.
It's in our policy.
It's in our policy
that a parent can leave their child here at the age of 13. It's in our policy.
Currently says 12.
Okay. My God, we really wrong by my new 12.
It says 12. That's what the proposal is.
Go ahead, Ms. Rebecca.
Y'all can bow. Thank goodness my son is 32. He serves in the military, and I don't worry about him because he's got sense. And what's great as well. But if you go to your state heavens, your lower ranks, and your movies, there is an age to which you can drop your child off. And it is older than 13. You have to have parental guidance with you. So look into that. You know, what are these people adapting to age-wise? Because I remember when there was a bowling alley here in Denham Springs. A lot of mischief went on because parents were dropping their young children off. They shut it down, and I think you had to be 17 years of age at that time in order to get into the bowling alley and have young children with you, or you had to have a parent with you younger than that.
Well, everything else, even in the policy, requires you to be 18.
That bowling alley is now closed. It's a jumping thing now in that area. But check into their policies and see what they recommend. Because I can tell you, I have visited the library, and I am so excited with what I've been seeing and everything y'all have shown me here. Did not know this was available. But I do want to make sure it's safe for children. And that, you know, when they come here, y'all have a lot of responsibility that y'all shouldn't have to take on. It should be the parent taking that on. And any parent that would drop a 13-year-old off by themselves, I have a question. I get this is a good building, and these are good people, but we don't live in some really good times. And so just whatever y'all think is best, look into what other people might want.
Well, I don't think most 13-year-olds can't get here unless they live around here. They have to come with their parents. But there are teen programs where parents do bring their kids, you know, and drop them off at the teen program where they are actually being supervised. They actually, I think it's in here, in this room right here, you know, and they make crafts and watch movies and stuff. So, you know, if you insist on parents staying with a kid who's like 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 in the library, it's going to put a downer on those teen programs.
You know, if y'all have a special thing that I get, but just to drop your child off.
They actually have a lot of study groups that come here, too.
You were going into the board for a reason to use your judgment, and that's a lot of trust you for.
Is there a problem right now with 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds, and 15-year-olds?
One of the reasons, like I said, it was near to me because I'm right there across the street from Doyle High School. And we do have that sixth grade where they are just not mature enough at 11 and 12 to be in the library. And I will say that 13 is a good, because the parents aren't getting there to pick them up on time for whatever reason. Maybe they have to work another hour or two before, you know, when the kids get off of school. That's fine. And I understand that as a parent of six myself and five still in school, I understand that sometimes you're a little late, and that gives them the ability to walk over and get their snack on in Wednesday and be in the library and be somewhere that is safe. But 11 and 12, they're still giving us problems where they don't want to listen to authority. They think they're grown because they're in sixth grade now. So that was where that 13-year-old, not so much that we even have problems with anyone dropping their kids off normally. I mean, you might have one or two, you know, that happens. But that's where it originally came from, to make that 13, because that gave us just a few more years for some responsibility for those kids that come over from Doyle.
Back to your example there. And if the library, God forbid, something happens, some type of accident, whatever happens to them, they get hurt, y'all going to be open. Y'all are more likely going to be liable. And then they're going to come back and say, y'all are negligent, you want to watch your child, and you have a supervision, something like that.
Well, and that's why it's a policy to say 13. If you let your child come over there at 13, then you open yourself up that you let your child come over at 13 alone. I mean, that's where having it in policy is in place.
Where does that say that in policy, though?
Well, it says in policy, a 13-year-old can be at the library alone. So if you let your child come over to the library at 13...
But we're reinforcing that, so it's no guilt there. I mean, if you argue that in the court case, there's no guilt. We're taking the same responsibility as a parent.
We'll also have that same responsibility if an 18-year-old gets hurt in the library, too. I mean, it's just, if someone gets hurt...
An 18-year-old is probably not going to be trafficked. For a 13-year-old girl will.
Thank you.
Well, a 13-year-old would be more likely to be trafficked from the streets than from the library.
Right, they will, but if they're left alone at the library.
But if they're not at the library, they're going to be at home by themselves or on the streets.
We don't know that.
Something like 90% of kids who are sexually abused are sexually abused by somebody that they know. I said 90% of kids who are sexually abused are sexually abused by somebody they know. Somebody in the family or friends. Huh?
So roll the dice on 10%? That's really wild.
Well, I don't know how the other 10% are. I mean, I'm just saying. Wow. You know.
So basically, at 13, you're allowed, and I'm a former educator. I mean, I was a parent too. My children came to the library to study, study groups, and I was like, Mom, I'm going to tell you, I didn't stay with them all the time. I couldn't. But I also trusted them, and we had talked about this, and the library was not responsible for my children. Had they misbehaved, I expected them to get kicked out.
And we do have kids that come over during finals and things like that walk over, or, you know, that they drive and they park in our parking lot at Main Branch. And before they go home, they come in and they use the study rooms to study and things like that. So, I mean, again, it's up to the board. I can only give my recommendation.
So if a group of students wanted to stay at the school or use the library at a school, they could just go in and do that after hours?
No, not at school.
Not at a school? Okay.
Not a public school.
I'd like to ask a question. So if you had a 16-year-old come in and they're going to use a room for private study, and because some kids focus better whenever it's not, you know, even the library is very, very quiet. And do y'all have a thing for the parents to sign, or that 16-year-old to sign away the parents' rights that the child can be in that room without somebody being watching over them or anything? Is there a paper saying that they
shall class?
The study rooms are glass booths.
Yes. But do y'all have anything that says that the parent has to sign away from their rights for that child to be able to be in that room, in that booth by themselves?
Why would they sign away their rights?
Yeah. So I'm not sure why.
She's asking who's the responsible party for when somebody is
when
requesting
they go into a study?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Who,
like what are
request,
they doing in there?
How do you request a
study?
How do you request?
They use their library card and they sign up for it.
They use a library card and they sign up.
So the parents do not have to sign anything?
No.
It's not made.
Like, you mean if they damage the room, like, who's responsible?
Being brought in there. anything being any kind of material or anything, the parent relinquishes their right to be held accountable while that child is in that room.
I'm not really sure I understand what you're asking.
Is a piece of paper presented to the parent?
No. What are you saying is going on in the room? Like you're saying,
like if the child is in there by themselves, then it relinquishes the right of the library to not be held accountable because it's not, they're not in the full right the spectrum of the library.
Well,
the booths are glass. You can see them right there.
Right.
So it's no different than them sitting at a computer other than we can't hear what they're saying.
Right. So there's nothing that they have to sign for protection.
They have to have a library card in order to see.
Yeah, I think it was in here. It said that like the parent assumes a responsibility when they get the child a library card.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever that the kid checks out. So if they use the card to check out a room, the parent's assuming the responsibility. It's part of the policy.
So then when they assume the responsibility of it, they don't have to write anything. They don't have to sign anything. There's not a piece of paper.
Well, they did when they first got the card.
When they first got the card for their child, they signed
a piece of paper saying they accept responsibility for their child's use of the card.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay.
I was just wondering.
Yeah.
What is the state law for an unaccompanied minor?
You can stay home at 12 by yourself.
Just at home, or is it general?
Well, I don't know about general, but I know that having...
Yeah, under the age of 12, you can be charged with neglect or abandonment, endangerment.
If they're under 12,
yeah.
I think this needs to be looked at more and talked about in a different section because there are a lot of questions.
Right, and that's why we started
around,
with 13. If the citizens decide they want to talk to the board and the council, the board about, when they open it up for open comment, then
And as somebody who served overseas, and everything, I've seen a lot that may not have happened, and this is a small community, and I love it. But the things that I've seen and heard as a service member, there are a lot of questions that I think we can go, we can't fix everything, we're not going to please everybody. But I do see where there are some safety concerns that need to be met. But again, as I said, you guys aren't a daycare, and you can't control everything. If I'm up on something and I fall off, over here, I legally could sue you as much as a parent of a child could sue you. So there's a certain amount of responsibility on my part, and a certain amount of responsibility on my part for that my child.
Right.
I just also want to say you guys are doing a great job handling this because I'm going for a beer now.
Thank you.
I know you said 13 was the age that you picked, and I think somebody may have answered, but where did 13 come from?
That is because the branch that I still manage, because while I'm still a director, because we don't have anywhere yet, they have students that come over from Doyle, and because that sixth grade is still 11, and they will come over and tell us, we'll say, are you 12? Oh, yes, ma'am. And luckily, I'm from here, and I know a lot of these kids and a lot of their parents. They go, I don't think so. I don't think you are. And so that just gives us that little bit of extra maturity to have those kids come over from Doyle at 13 and not 11 or 12 because it's very hard to tell by looking at kids sometimes how old they are these days. So that's where that came from. And we had, for a while, had to have a police officer at my branch because of that sixth grade age that think they don't have to listen to authority. And then we just have found that as they're maturing into that 13, 14-year-old, that they are more apt to respect the property and respect the librarians and the library itself, not put their feet on the tables and that kind of stuff.
I can tell you from working with junior high students for 30 years, sixth graders,
I refuse to teach sixth grade.
Seventh graders are delightful. They come in, how are you doing, Miss Anderson? They sit down, get out their work. Sixth graders, not so much. What can I get away with today? There's a difference in a 13-year-old boy and a 12-year-old. They just mature by the time they're 13. 11-year-olds. Oh, heavens. Oh, I can't do 11-year-olds.
So what you're saying, Michelle, is that the change of age policy was just more to address a problem that y'all were directly having rather than to get into a discussion.
I mean, if you go to the other branches like South and Albany,
it's not
they don't have at all. Yeah, they don't have a school right next door to them for people to walk across the street to. So that was where the main problem came in.
And I had stopped and talked to the librarians, and they've come up with some lovely ideas for implementing the age check-in with your card when you walk in. If there's a disciplinary action has to be taken against the child, they can put it into the computer under the child's name so that anybody can see this is how many infractions this child has.
And that's
so they had some really good ideas.
That's if we have to call a parent or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Get your baby. So, and if we see that 13's not good enough, we can move it up. This is just taking a step to solve a problem that has existed for a while, because I have been over there in the afternoon after school since I'm a retired lady, and I was like, oh my goodness, they got babies here. But the older children are sitting there doing their homework on the computers, working and, you know, sitting around, drinking a cup of coffee, having discussions, studying. It's just the babies that were giving us the problem.
So you want to make a motion?
If someone wants to make a motion.
I make a motion to accept all of the amendments as presented at this time. And if something changes,
we can readdress it. I second it.
Roll call. Messed up the whole system. I'm sorry.
Yeah, get to that date.
Sorry.
Ivy Graham?
Yes.
Kathy DeGeneres?
Yes.
Melissa Anderson?
Yes.
Larry Davis?
No.
Francine Smith?
Yes. All the amendments, changes, and adoptions are approved as presented. That gets us to the end of our meeting, unless someone else has something else.
Yes,
sir. I know I'm here to make up for it, but could I speak for a second?
Oh, sure. We've completely gone off rail tonight.
I do apologize. My wife had that surgery. I was waiting for my daughter to get home from work. Just want to let the board know that last night I made a recommendation to the council to add a position for District 6 board member. I asked for a resume, letter recommendation, history behind yourself. It was several more things I asked. Mr. Davis wanted to print it out in the paper, run it through the paper. We're going to ask for this to be in by the 31st of this month. I tried to push it sooner so we could get them in place before the 1st. So I think it's a good thing. I have spoke to a lot of you ladies on the board, and I spoke to the public. I don't want to be a person to make a decision of the wrong person. I want to make sure I have equal rights for everybody to have a chance to serve on this board. Yes, education, yes. You might have a great education, but you really don't fit the need we need for the library. Or you might be the best with the best education, we really need you. So I want to do the study on you and pass it on to my fellow peers and make sure I make the right decision. So thank you guys. I appreciate you guys.
Thank you. All right, guys. I think that brings us to the end of the meeting. So all in favor of adjournment, please stand up.
I'm so jealous of your blanket.
I know.
I am sitting out here.